Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
All right, Rusty boy. That's my boy. Come on now, Rusty boy. You're the boss in there. Hi, everyone. Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables with, of course, me up in Alberta and Russ Cortinel, longtime NHL, longtime superstar, speedster. Man of the hour, each and every week right here down in L.A. Rusty, is that where you're holed up right now?
Yep.
You know it's coming, right? You know it's coming.
You just don't know when.
Yeah, you just don't know. No, I know when, right away.
Yeah.
Right away in about every 50. You can set your watch by it. Are you kidding me? Every 15 minutes. What's going on, Rusty? Bring us up to speed what you're doing before we talk about what's on the show.
Well, couple things. One sad note, I got a really good friend, Ron LaForgia, that's not doing well. So I spent some Paris, I went and spent some time with him the other night, and he's got cancer all over the place. So yeah, it's not good. And he's just a great guy, been a longtime friend. And he's trying to find, he's at home tonight looking up the show because he wants, his friend really wants to hear it. So he's asking me all kinds of questions, which was kind of cute. But anyways, my buddy Ron's not doing well. So that's been kind of, that's been a little thorn for
dragging
us.
Dragging you down. Yep.
Yeah, a little bit and a lot, I should say. And then all that talk of gambling, longtime listener Michael Shanahan Jr., whose dad used to own the St. Louis Blues, listens to our show all the time.
Well, nice shout out. Yeah.
And he and I are putting bets on football games, which I've never really done before in my life.
Right.
And so I'm freaking watching more football than I've ever watched in my
life. nothing like a little cash, right? To get you interested.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Just when we think we're going to take a little run, we get a little pullback.
Right.
But it's been fun. It's been fun for me because I've never done it before. So I was texting him earlier, you know, what are we doing? What are we doing? And anyways, funny, he convinced me, he's been unbelievable on the halftime over. So for all the gamblers out there, you guys know what the over or under is.
Yep.
So he's been on fire halftime over until last night. We lost our first one. And yeah, yesterday the 13th was not a good day for Rusty. gave back some money.
Oh yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite lines, Russ, and I love gambling. I was on it for a bit, you know, farting around playing blackjack, and then you just get destroyed, you know? So that run was no good. But my most favorite take on gambling is my buddy who said, "I'm on my way to Vegas. I hope I break even. I could use the cash." isn't that great? Anyway,
that is great.
Speaking of gambling, on the show today, we got to talk about the Gretzky rookie card that went for $1.3 million.
Yeah.
Crazy. You're probably, when everyone heard that, if you're like me, you're like, God, I think I had one of those. Yikes. We want to hear about your son, Lawton. I see you posted something that he played his first professional game. We talked about him several shows ago, and we had him on, actually, one show. So we're going to find out about him. The NHL, Rusty, is going to roll out a 56-game schedule, which will start in the new year. And a couple things out of that. One is COVID. The update on COVID here in Alberta is not good. They've declared a heavy state of emergency starting a few days ago, full lockdown as much as you can, no social gatherings, $1,000 fines, Russ, for no masks and stuff like that. So I'm not sure how they're going to pull that off. And then the other thing that kind of leaked out, and I'm sure they regret it, was, you know, vaccines are going to are on their way. Mm-hmm. And someone laid out there that, well, the NHL is just going to buy them.
Oh, great.
Right. And the backlash from that is, oh, really? Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So you're going to jump the queue. So they've been backpedaling on all that. But also out of that, interesting, Russ, is they're going to have a Canadian division.
Mm-hmm.
All Canadian teams out of that. And I want to talk to you about that. We got a couple of shout outs. Scott Flake. I'm finally learning how to get our emails and stuff. Fights in practice. He wants to hear from you about that one. He brings up, did Gary Lehman fight Al Secord? Were you around then? Was there a story about Al Iafrady fighting in practice? So we're gonna talk about that. Another dude. Who was your favorite goalie and your least favorite goalie? We talked a little bit about that with Mike mm-hmm. Vernon. And someone said you were gonna talk about coaches losing the room. And we never did get to that. So we'll talk about that and a lot more. But the big news, Rusty, okay? The big news is the Suspendables podcast now has a website, okay? Website. Click away, folks. It's all on there, okay?
Beautiful.
Yeah, the suspendables.ca, suspendables.com. Everything is on there. We want to hear from you. It's been up and going for about a week or so now, maybe a couple of weeks. So we're super pleased. It's Christmas time. There's the merch button is on there. Shop now. Facebook's on there. You go to our Twitter. We got a YouTube site, everything. It's all there. So check it out. The suspendables.ca, the suspendables.com. And there's a little button on there, Rusty, that I love. Top right, contact us. Okay.
Nice.
And those go right to you. So you can pour over all those emails.
Oh yeah. Right.
And of course, all the shows are on there. We're well into our 70s. I don't know what number this is. You usually do. You usually know the number, but we're just getting to almost 80 shows. I think 76, 7, this might be 78, 79. So, of course, you can listen to all of them there. So thanks a lot, all you fans. Thanks a lot for buying some merch. Merry Christmas is never said better than with a Suspendables t-shirt or hat or a hoodie, Russ.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. So you can do all your shopping there. So, Rusty, let's get into it. The NHL 56-game schedule. They're somehow going to try and pull this off. They're looking at a start date the middle of January, I think the 13th. That was the last reported thing. That may change now with the Alberta lockdown. But mm-hmm. out of that, because of travel restrictions, you're going to have an all-Canadian division. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a bubble deal. And then... the other divisions will stay within their division to try and keep travel down and all that stuff. So what do you think?
I think it's great. I think it's great for the fans. We've all been through this now. This will be the second time. With the actual season, shortened season, but I think it's great for the fans. We're all living in a different time and we're all doing things totally different than from normal life. So anything that can distract us from what's going on with COVID and the pandemic, I think it's a great thing. Even though it's shortened, it might be in a bubble, who knows? But we get to sit at home and watch some sports. So the sports fans and hockey fans, I think it's great. And for the players, they get at least, you know, part of a season. Financially, you know, they get to make some money. So I think it's during these times, it's a win-win. I don't see the downside from it. It could be worse, right? There could be zero hockey. I mean, there could be none for another year.
Well, I guess there's no perfect way. If teams staying in their division, I would always think, Russ, as a player, that Northeast division there where you got to walk about 500 yards to go play another team, mm-hmm. right? With, you know, Philly, New York, Pitt, all those, you know, in around there. The all Canadian thing, I thought, God, that sounds great all the time. Anytime. You know what I mean?
The travel would get you. I mean,
well, it's still going to be unfair. And that's my question. So Vancouver's got to zip a hard 5.5 to Montreal. Although they charter, of course, and everything, do you see that as a problem, Russ, with with the way they're laying this out and this all Canadian thing.
No, I think it's going to be fine. I think that the players will adjust. You know, they'll probably head out west for 2 weeks, probably play a bunch of games and then go back and forth. It's an advantage for the teams south of the border who are in a, like you said, in the Northeast where they don't have to do much, but
right.
It's not a long season, you know, for a few months. It's not going to be horrible. It'll be over before you know it. Could cause a few more injuries maybe in that with the travel and stuff because of them being a little bit worn out and stuff. But, you know, you got to take what's given right now. And this is better than nothing. And I'm sure the players they're just excited that they're going to be able to play. I mean,
well, you know, there's COVID cases are happening all the time. Right. And mm-hmm. they're trying to get a handle on it. It's not good here in Alberta. BC looks like it's not going to do very well. But one thing you don't hear, which surprised me, Russ, is at some point I expected an athlete or two in any of the sports to come forward and go, I don't want to play, man.
No, they have. Football players aren't playing.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So shows you what I know.
No, but you're right. There's a player on the Vikings that's not playing. They had the option to opt out for health reasons or something. That they didn't want to play and put themselves in jeopardy. So they definitely have players that have said no. And we had it in the playoffs. There were players that left because of family. They said they didn't want to be in there. Mm-hmm. In the NHL, a couple guys showed up late with COVID. I can say a guy's got asthma problems or he's, you know, we've had a couple players battling cancer.
Right.
I mean, those type of people would probably be a little leery of being around a bunch of people every day and potentially get sick.
What does your daughter say about her boyfriend, Eric Kendricks, who's playing for the Vikings? What's his take on all of it?
Well, he is so careful and really worried about it because if you got it, they got a test every day. And if you get it, then you have to go on the IR and you can't play. So he was paranoid of getting it, so he wasn't able to play. And then they had, I think if they're caught in an environment, like they were told, like Lawton playing in Wheeling, West Virginia in the East Coast Hockey League, they had a meeting, they had quarantine for a few days, and they were told what they can and can't do. These two restaurants you can eat at, you can't go to any of these bars, you can't go here, you can't go there, you can go to this grocery store. So he said they've almost created their own bubble.
Right.
And same with the NFL, they have, you know, they're not allowed to go to certain places. So yeah, there's been some not funny stories, but you know, somebody went to Chuck E. Cheese and then all of a sudden the husband was sick and couldn't play. Got to take the kids to Chuck E. Cheese's.
Right. What would you do if you were a player right now in these trying times?
Watching my kids, like watching Lawton and watching Eric, I think I would do the exact same thing. I mean, they're so, especially the NFL players, they're so high profile that if they were seen somewhere, you know, be on social media and then all hell would break loose. So, and a lot of places, you know, there are places, if you're in Florida, all the bars and restaurants are open. If you're in California, everything's shut down. So it just depends where you live.
Yeah.
Temptations to go out, even say the hard part would be if you lived in a city where everything was open and you had to stay home. That would be tough.
Right.
That would be tough. If the coach said, look, you guys, you just can't go here, you can't go there, and everything was open, that would be brutal. That would test Rusty. Might in his day, he doesn't like to dress up for Halloween, but he might have dressed up to go out to a restaurant or a bar.
A reminder, you can follow the Suspendables on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. and check out our new website, thesuspendables.ca.
Anyway, let me read you something back to talking about this Canadian division, which, you know, I wonder if they should do it all the time. I really like it. So the obvious reason is the travel. So they got to have all the Canadian teams staying here. However, what it does guarantee are Canadian teams making the playoffs. And I read a piece, Russ, well, it was about a month ago, with the ratings of the NHL playoffs, okay, were, I don't know, down 70%, the viewership.
Yeah, I heard it was
bad. Know, of it. And they say it's because of the lack of Canadian teams when they get knocked out. So this'll help that. It'll help the sponsorship. Let me read this. Josh Goldsmith came up with this article off The Score. The NHL has reportedly established a tentative plan, of course, for divisions in the 2021 season. And while some teams' playoff chances would clearly improve under the proposed format, other clubs could be in for a more difficult campaign. It goes without saying the 56-game schedule would mean fewer contests in general, but some teams will certainly feel a difference in the quality of their foes. Assuming realignment follows the reported structure, here are five franchises that will be better served under the plan and five squads that won't. Tampa Bay, they're saying. Toronto bodes well for them. And Dallas, it bodes well. Colorado, watch out for them. St. Louis, going to be good. And then the teams they don't think it'll work for very well is Boston, Buffalo, the Coyotes. Like, they haven't had enough of a hard time. Your Canucks, doesn't look good for them, and the Devils. Yeah. Anyway, I like it. I like it. It piqued my interest when they started an all Canadian division. So watch out for that. Let's get an update next, Rusty, on your son Lawton. And this is from we've got a listener, Russ, from Russia.
Get out of here.
Yeah, and his name is Dan. I want to Alexianov, and he lives in Vladivostok. He wants to know. He said, "Where's the update on Russ's son? You kept us up to speed about his college career. What's happening with Lawton, hockey player?"
So he's been waiting, like all these kids, to see where he's going to go. And because he wasn't drafted, he's a free agent out of college. And so Jeff Jackson's his agent, and you know, they've been talking back and forth all summer, just what's going on. And more of it was updates and trying to tell a kid to be patient. It's tough when you've got ready, you know, you've been preparing for this moment your entire life, and then COVID hits. So he started getting calls from Wheeling. They're in the East Coast Hockey League and their affiliate to Pittsburgh Penguins. And they kept calling, and so Lawton was talking to him, and then they came to an agreement 4 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, and he left and quarantined for 3 days. They did their fitness tests. So they got there on a Sunday, did their fitness tests and medicals on Wednesday, I guess.
Right.
And then they started practicing the following week, and they had their first game the other night. They lost 3-2. Lawton was first two shifts. He looked really nervous, and then he settled in and he played a really good game. His line scored the first goal, and he looked good. He looked good. Right. He looked like, you know, like when any of the other kids, and they have more games this weekend, and we get to watch it on Flow Hockey. So if anybody's interested in watching hockey, you can go on these websites, $20 a month or something. And that's how we watched him through college, was through NCHH TV or something like that. I can't remember. Right. And there's these great sites, the Flow Hockey, what do you call it? The feed wasn't great, but we got to watch our son play. So it was great. Saturday night, the Courtnell household watching our son play first pro hockey game. It was great.
Right. Take us inside your head a little bit, Russ. And it's crowded in there, by the way. It's very crowded in there.
Yeah.
The parent of a kid who's looking at making the show.
Yeah.
You're not the first NHL guy to have a son who's come up. There's lots of them. And I always wondered how tough it is on a kid who's coming up behind a father who had a tremendously successful long career in the NHL. I don't want to put you in a real tough spot, but I will. what will cause him to make an NHL team, Russ? And what do you tell him that you maybe think he needs to improve on?
Well, here are the positives about Lawton. He's gifted athlete, big, strong kid. He's really fast and he knows exactly the type of player he is. And a lot of players, especially top six, you know, the top six forwards on every team, they think that they can go to the NHL and be a top six, or, you know, a guy who's fifth, sixth always thinks he should be 1-2. And those players have the hardest time because there's not room for the top six on every team. And so those players, if you can't adjust and become 7, 8, 9 or 10, 11, 12, you're going to be in the minors forever or not make it at all. Lawton's a really good penalty killer. He's a reliable defensive player, and he know that's the type of player he's going to be. Is, you know, he'll be a third or fourth line player wherever he plays, and he'll be relied on for penalty killing and a regular shift kind of guy. So that's the positive of Lawton. When I watch him play, I worry about all the things that the coach gets pissed off about. You know, like if when you're on the wall in the offensive zone, the D-man comes around, gives you a great pass. You got to make a good second play. You got to carry that puck out or get the puck out of your zone. And you just, you know, around the blue lines, then get the puck in. That could be skating it in or get it in behind the defenseman. And so they're just, you got to be reliable. We allow in hockey, we allow the top six guys to make mistakes, you know, the curl and drag. The coaches don't like it, but you know, you'll give a freebie once in a while to some right. of those players. You don't want that to happen, but you know, if Sidney Crosby curls and drags at the blue line, he gets poke checked. He's not getting benched. Lawton knows what kind of player he is. And I just, you know, for me and others, he has the ability to keep moving up the ladder. And I think a lot of it's just going to have to do with him, whether he believes in himself so strongly that he has to have that FU attitude where he's just got to keep leapfrogging and not be satisfied where he's at. So it's exciting. I was really proud of the way he played and excited too, because I haven't seen an East Coast Hockey League game, and I heard about the league and he looked good. So I'm happy right now. I'm happy, but it's hard on Paris when we watch the games, because I'm freaking yelling at the TV. Like, you know, I'm yelling good and bad. Like when he doesn't do something right, I get upset at the TV. And when he does something great, I scream even louder. So it's a roller coaster for her. I'm sure she wishes she could put it on in the bedroom and in the living room and tell me to F off and go out to the fucking living room and watch the game.
Right.
So it's fun. I'm like any other father, man. The problem is I know what the coach is thinking. And so I get a little more intense on the details of the game that the coach is expecting him to do, that I know he is. So that's probably the hard part.
So have you had those discussions with him? For example, you watched the game the other night. Did you phone him after and say, here's good, here's what you need to work on?
Yeah. So he calls, we talk after every game.
Right.
And if it's a really bad game or whatever, I just like, you know what? I know he doesn't want to talk about it or.
Right.
I'll give you an example. He had a 2-on-1 and he passed right away. And so I wasn't mad at him. I just said, here's what you need to focus on. When you get that 2-on-1, sell something. You got to sell something, sell the shot to the goalie and slide it over or sell the pass and then shoot it at the goalie. But he just got the puck and he passed it right away. And I said, Lawton, you got to get, you know, sell something. I know. He goes, well, like the reason he passed it so quick was he thought he might get it back. And so I loved that. I loved his answer why he, you know, wanted it back. So anyways, that's, that's kind of stuff we just have a conversation about. If something's really not going well, I'll say something like, you know, you got to be better at this or better at that.
Right.
But he generally knows. He generally knows because the coach has probably already yelled at him.
Right, right. I mean, it's tough being a parent of a kid. You know, never mind a kid who's looking at making the NHL. Just being a parent of a kid who decides to go into athletics at all. You know, I remember, and when they're young, they're trying everything. You know, from sort of when they're 9 or 10 years old. And I remember going to a track meet with my daughter to watch. She would have been, I don't know, grade 8, maybe grade 7 or grade 8, and she was in a long distance running thing. Not because she wanted to, because they had to pick something.
Right.
And I remember her huffing and puffing and coming down the backstretch, you know, to make, I mean, maybe it was a 400 or something or whatever. And almost in tears, you know, of course, well, you know me. And she, you know, didn't placed way down in this, you know, 15 people out there. And it was my dad who gave me the greatest advice ever to when you're dealing with your kids and you're dealing with, we don't like to use the word, but disappointment or failure, you know, or not a bunch of success, as he always said, listen, praise the child, not the deed, you know, praise the kid, not the accomplishment. And God, did that ever save me a lot with when my kids had a difficult time doing stuff. And, you know, he said, hey, you know what? It didn't work out, but God, I'm proud of you. How hard you tried.
Yeah.
You know? How hard you tried and you kept trying to catch the ball or you kept trying to make a pass in soccer or whatever. So I can't imagine when you're, you know, with the expectation your son probably has and how tough it is in hockey, you know, to make it. So good for you. Sounds like you're handling it.
Yeah. I read something somewhere. These parents' kids went off to do something amazing in school and they said, what is the secret to your success? And they said when the kids came home from school and they did something great, they were like, congratulations. And then talk to them, like you're saying, like about them back and forth. And what they learned was the kids just kept doing better and better and better because they didn't set a ceiling or a basement. They just were like, yeah, good. Congratulations. And then they moved on and they didn't gush over the straight A's or scoring 3 goals or, you know, winning a track meet or something. Like they just, like you talked about them individually versus what just happened.
Well, the end of that conversation when my dad was talking to me about that. It was like, great advice. You know, I was like, this is fantastic. Praise the kid, not the deed. And he said, the reason you don't praise the deed is if they have a great game and they score 2 goals or they get, you know, they get a couple of 3-pointers, you know, or they get a home run. If you pull them aside and go, fantastic, man, you got a home run. You're setting them up for the kill if they don't get one the next game.
Paul Coffey, who played with Gretz for years and are very close. We did a thing in, he and I did a fundraiser and we went to Croatia with 40 to 60 couples from Canada.
No fun there.
Yeah. We helped raise money for Canadian Olympic athletes. It used to be called Gold Medal Plates. And now it's the Great Kitchen Party. And goes across Canada, raising money for athletes and music programs and culinary. Now it's sort of divided into 3 categories, but this one year when it was still the gold medal plates, we went and we spoke to, so we went on these boats and we toured around Croatia for 7 days and it was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And we had like 7 or 8 and they divided the boats up into 2 or 3 and we'd have lunch and we would talk. We'd have lunch with the group, have drinks. And someone said, what made Gretzky so great? And he said, you know what? Every year, Koff said Gretz would come to training camp and he'd be gunning down what he did the year before and try to beat So he always was trying to get to 300 points. So kind of back to what your dad, you know, back to your dad's advice and this other person. Gretz never set a ceiling or a limit on himself or anyone else. Like he, you know, he knew there was somebody going to, there was always going to be somebody trying to be, you know, as good as him, which there was only probably one at the time. It was Mary Lemieux who could even come close. Right.
Right.
That was the only guy really, I think, but Wayne was competing against himself and he was like, you know, great. I did that. But next year he was trying to beat what he did the year before.
Crazy.
And so, Koff was telling all these great stories about Gretz, like what made him so great. And he just said, he just kept trying to, you know, he gave an example, like they're winning a game and the other team had pulled the goalie and it was like, they're winning 7-4 or something. Gretz goes up to Koff, like, I'm going to win the drawback to you. Hit me. And Koff goes like, Gretz, it's 7-4. And he goes, fucking right. So let's make it 8.
Yeah, right. I told you the story. To make a long story short, is I did a piece for his website on outdoor rinks and I toured around the city here and did these outdoor rinks. And then he showed up by surprise. I was ending the bit at my place. I got a bunch of kids out of school because I had an outdoor rink. And he showed up by surprise. I didn't even know it. And it made for this great feature. And so the kids, we had two nets set up in the backyard. And then Gretz was on there. He showed up and he was hiding in my garage with his skates and sweats on and a toque and knocked on the door when we were filming this thing and stepped onto the ice. And it was just like, what the freak here, you know? And there was a little kid in net, maybe 7 or 8 years old. And so Gretz is sort of approaching him, chopping snakes, you know, click, 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 and fires it at 100, okay? Okay, up into one of the upper corners, right? Well, the kid starts crying. And Gretz just turned, you know, he said to me, he goes, I can't help it. Anytime I get a chance to score, I don't give a shit who's in net. it was kind of funny. Funny you bring up Koff's name, Rusty. It was 25 years ago. Are you there, Russ?
Sorry, I had to reach for another one. Please.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It was 25 years ago that Paul Coffey got 1,000 points.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. And Steve and I were talking yesterday doing the Ottawa podcast, and Stevie was telling me that all the he scored 48 goals one year.
Yeah.
Rusty. Okay, as a defenseman. And all the records of defensemen, like if you go back, I don't know, a short time or whatever records you look at, the last 10, I think Stevie, something like that, are either Paul Coffey or Bobby Orr.
Yeah, shit.
I got the stat if you need it, Jim.
Yeah, what's the stat, Stevie? Yeah.
Okay, so there have been only two defensemen to score 40 goals in a season. Coffey did it twice, Bobby Orr once. And the 10 greatest scoring seasons ever by a defenseman points-wise were all accomplished by Coffey and Orr.
Wow.
How's that? How's that, Rusty?
Yeah, Koff's amazing.
How come it won't happen again, Russ? How come no defenseman is getting freaking 40 goals? 48?
I don't know. I don't know. The way the game's being played, though, that the D-men can – I mean, some are like glorified forwards anyways. So, I don't know. It's going to be tough for a D-man to get – that many goals, but Koff was amazing. God, we'd be sitting on the bench, and I've told this story, but Dave Gagne, when we played in Dallas, we're playing against Edmonton or wherever Koff was playing at the time. Maybe it wasn't Edmonton, but I think it was. And he would be like a little kid, you know, a little kid with his little car, you know, and Koff would pick up the puck. He'd go back. He always went back, looked up ice.
Right.
Picked up the puck, one hand on his stick, and start flying. And Koff was, when he was gliding, he was picking up speed. And so Dave Gagne, right. On the bench, it was so funny.
The Roadrunner.
The Roadrunner, yeah.
Yeah. Some hockey player told me, too, that Mario, you'd see him streaking down the side going in front of their bench and he'd be going, wee, on the way by, you know, during a game. Anyway, congratulations to Koff. Great guy.
I got a new drink for our listeners.
Oh, okay. Good segue there. All right. What is it?
I've been, it's right around 5 o'clock.
Yep.
I like to have a Vesper.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's an original James Bond martini, and it's great. It's 3 ounces of gin. Yeah. I know. Sorry. I'll give you a cookie recipe after this.
Anyway, let's hear it.
3 ounces of gin, 1 ounce of vodka, and hopefully our French listeners don't beat me up, but half an ounce of Lillet.
Lillet. Oui, sure. Yeah, parfait.
Yeah. So 3 gin, 1 vodka, half Lillet, and then a lemon peel, stirred, not shaken.
Wow.
And it's a good one in the wintertime.
It's a beautiful one.
Paris said to me the other day, she goes, so what happened to the White Claws? Because I've been, she built me this beautiful bar and I love sitting here. So five.
Oh, wife. Oh my God.
I know, she's awesome. So she redid this bar. She comes up to me after a couple of weeks and says, what happened to the White Claws? And I said, well, I like these martinis. And I said, well, 3 White Claws or 1 of these? Same thing.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you're going to get us hammered, but you're not going to get us fat.
You know? Little buzz.
It's funny you bring up Mario and drinking. I'll tell you a great real story.
My God.
So I think it was called the World Championships. Gretz was the general manager of it, and the training camp was in Ottawa. Mario was part of that team. So we ended up playing golf every day, me and Mario, Wayne, a couple other guys.
Was it Canada and, Cup?
Yeah, maybe Canada. Well, it wasn't in 87. I was living in Ottawa, back in Ottawa. So it was after 97. The World Cup.
Okay, World Cup.
Anyway, we played a bunch of golf. Mario's a great guy. But Mario didn't travel to the exhibition games. Gretz said, no, you need to rest. And so him and I, we'd play golf. And we played at the Hunt Club, and he's a fantastic golfer. And then
he's a great golfer.
And he said, well, let's go for dinner. And I had announced at that time, Russ, that I was quitting drinking. Okay. Yeah. But I really hadn't. Okay. But everyone thought I was, and they were super proud and all that. Anyway, I said to Mary, okay, I just want to step in the house here. I want to change. Right. And he says, well, don't leave me in the car. And he walks in, and my mother's sitting there knitting in her muumuu, okay, with a big glass of scotch. And mm-hmm. and Mario's just a striking figure, you know, big, handsome dude. He's about 6'4", however
tall. Got the accent to boot.
Got the accent. And my mom, he walks into the living room and said, Mom, this is my friend, Mario. and my mother goes, well, I've never met him before. What do you mean he's a friend? Who are you?
Oh.
You know? And like she was being funny, you know, kind of funny, but she had no idea who he was. Right. And I said, Mom, this is Mario Lemieux. Okay. A great hockey player. He said, oh, good. Mario, you'll have a drink. He says, sure. And so he sits down. He's like, what are you knitting there, Mrs. Jerome? You know? And anyway, he stands there. I get changed quick. We get in the car. She had no idea who he was, you know, and he'd never talk about himself. And then I get a voicemail from my mother saying, Jungle, I don't know who that man was, but he is the most handsome goddamn thing I've ever seen in my body. Tall and shit. And she was like, my mother was like bowled over, you know. But anyway, so they think I don't drink. I go downtown. We go for dinner, and they put us at the bar first, waiting for a table. It's just me and Mario. And they say, you'll have a drink, Mr. Lemieux. And he goes, do you got Stoli's vodka? So I'm sitting there. The guy goes, absolutely. He goes, you got it on ice? He goes, right here, sir. Big bucket of ice. Beautiful.
Yeah.
He goes, okay, give me a couple ounces of Stoli's. You got triple sec? The guy goes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I like it a little dry. Can you crush the ice and put it in there, right? And he goes, absolutely. You know, the guy got the nice flute. We do it like that in a little. So crushed ice, and in goes the Stoli's frozen. And he goes, do you have a big olive? Do you got the, you know, in the French accent, do you got the big olive? The guy goes, absolutely. He lifts up a tray of these giant, beautiful Italian olives, right? He goes, do you mind just squeezing a couple of those into there and then drop them in on top of the ice? And would you pour the triple sec over top? You guys, for sure. I'm sitting there listening to Mario. Mario says, truly. I got to go for a leak. I go to the bartender. Give me fucking one of those. Give me one. Jesus. Did that ever sound good, you know?
How many did you end up having?
Oh, I could listen, Russ. I was the best sneak drinker in the world. I had it down.
Okay, no bragging. How many did you have?
Well, I had two. Well, he was in the can, and he was only there about 3 minutes. The guy said to me, he goes, they're not shooters.
So you didn't keep drinking in front of, like when he came out, you didn't have like wine or anything?
No drink. I had the ginger ale right there.
So you were really doing the hide. You were doing
I drank 4 ounces of vodka. I said, forget the olives, forget the, give me two shots of vodka.
Oh my God. So there, I can't say her name, but there's a famous lady up at Gosser and she's, her husband doesn't drink. Right. And I didn't. So I heard this all after. So I'm sitting at the bar, shocker.
Yeah.
She comes in and I say hello. Yep. She's a big hockey fan. And she has, can I get a tequila on the rocks? And I'm looking through the window and her table is outside. So I thought, that's kind of weird. She goes, yeah, I'm putting it in a go cup. She goes to the can. And doesn't come out with the drink and goes back and sits at her table. And I asked somebody, I go, what was that all about? Oh, her husband doesn't drink anymore and he doesn't let her drink. And I go, wow. Well, obviously he can't smell.
Well, I was going to say, well, that's why you got to drink Zambuca. That's
right. Oh, fuck. I was so impressed. I mean, it was a huge glass. Like, the Gosser pours are crazy. Right. I always tell my friends, when you're at Discovery, don't ask for a double because you're getting a double at least when you get a regular drink. Yeah.
You're getting your $20 worth in one shot.
Oh, my God. In Canada, it would be called a quadruple.
Right.
Because we have to measure up there by law, right, don't we? Isn't it by law? They can't free pour?
I don't know. My dad was a classy drinker, you know, and I remember they did, you know, if the boss was there, the bar I hung out here for years and years, the Sidetrack Cafe, if you're from Edmonton, and if the owner of the bar was there, well, then the bartenders are measuring it to the freaking millimeter.
Yeah,
it's like better with the shot glass and all that. But if he wasn't around, they'd free pour. Yeah, anyway, I take my dad. I said, Dad, you got to come to this. This is like me for show and tell, Russ, bringing my dad to where I hang out and drink. And and my old man he was a Scotch drinker. And he says, he called him barkeep. You know, my dad thought he grew up in a Western, you know, in a saloon. He goes, barkeep, give me a double JB on the rocks, would you? And water, double JB and water. And the kid's pouring it right to the, you know, because the boss is there, right? And so like blup, blup, two little shots go in there. My dad takes a sip and pushes it back to him. And always said, if you put any more water in these drinks, you're going to have to serve them with fucking life jackets. anyway,
great. My buddy, you know, I've talked about my Maui dad, Pard Erdman, who listens to the show, by the way.
Hey, Pard. All right, brother.
Yeah, Pard, Kathy.
Yeah.
Kathy's a pain in the ass, but you know what? Pard's keeping her in line. He got me drinking Gentleman Jack.
That's good, Russ. Yeah. You want to squeeze another one in there on the menu.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to have options. Yes. So we would, after dinners, we would, in Maui, we would, on Friday nights, when we'd go to Chip and Sip, we'd get home around 9 o'clock. Chip and Sip. Maui midnight, 9 o'clock. Sometimes, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock, we'd get home. I'd drop him off, go in, and he'd say, do you want to have a cowboy juice before we go to, you know, before we go home? So Pardon, I would have these, I'm looking right at the bottle as we speak, Gentleman Jack, and it's got a black screw top.
Right.
And he would just take that lid and he'd fill it up, put it in, and then put a little splash of water and no ice. Cowboy juice, he called it. Well, I would take two of those and put ice in. I have to have it cold. I'm not there yet on just the room temperature.
Tequila. Yeah.
Oh. Or
bourbon.
So anyways, Gentleman Jack.
Gentleman Jack. All right.
That's Pard's Pirates drink.
Attaboy, Pirate. And to everyone else, I like, let's see, Stan Biffar, I think his name is, all right, who made a comment about the NHL teams are coming out with face masks, right, with their logos on them, right, for with COVID, right, that they got these masks. And all the NHL teams are doing it with their logos. And he says, don't buy the Leafs one. It can't stop anything.
Oh, God.
I was going to ask you about the coaches losing the room. We didn't have a chance to get to it. And that's from Tim Cordes, who is listening from the Grand Cayman Islands. Big fan of the show. And he gave me a little nudge, a little shot. He said, hey, you didn't ask Russ about how does a coach lose the room, and wants to you to walk us through that whole thing.
Okay, so when we had Tom Rennie in Vancouver, he was a rookie coach out of the Western Hockey League. And he came in with, you know, expectations, and he thought that he was going to do it this way, which was, you know, I told the story how he said no booze on the plane and Esa Tikkanen said, I'll get a doctor note. So that was kind of the beginning. And he had some weird system, like left wing lock, and nobody understood it. And then here's where he lost the room. And it wasn't going well before this, but he said, I need everybody to make a commitment to this team, to your teammates, to this, to that, to that. And he put on, he wrote, had this thing, like it was like the Ten Commandments.
Right.
And he said, I want every guy to sign this, and you're committed to this team and winning and whatever. And I think half the team signed it.
Oh, no way.
And oh yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so that's losing the room. I mean,
sounds annoying.
You know, he could go. Well, it was, and it was brutal, and it was a joke. And Tom, I ran into him years later when he was in Vancouver for the NHL Awards, and he talked to me. He goes, you know, I learned a lot, and I've learned how to treat pros like pros. And he just came in, and he thought he had, you know, it was romper room.
Right.
You know, there's, and he just didn't know at that time, he wasn't ready, but he, you know, like he learned and went on to coach. Now he's running Hockey Canada, and he probably can tell anyone when that year in Vancouver, it was tough for him because he just didn't realize what it was like in the pros. And he, you know, that's losing the room. And it's just when coaches tend to, you know, it's usually on losing teams 9 times or 10 times out of 10.
That makes sense.
And, yeah. You know, if the coach, Sean Brophy, would try and bag skate us, and after about the 50th time, guys are like, you know what? Fuck him. I'm not going to do it. And they just stop. And then rather than be more pissed off or embarrassed, they just blow the whistle because there's always media there too, right? They never want the media to see the players kind of disrespect the coach.
Right.
And the message gets lost if that, you know, we see these good coaches being recycled every 3 to 4 or 5 years because they've stopped listening, or their point is just not getting across. But they're still good coaches, but they've lost the room, and they need to change it. And that's, you know, we've seen lots of good coaches go to other teams, and where they were dead in the water with one team, they go to another team and they win, and then all of a sudden they start losing, boom, they're on to another team. Or, you know,
well, I always thought, you know, we had Larry Robinson on, right, who was a player, assistant, consultant, head coach, Stanley Cup winner on both levels. And you know, if you had a choice, when you talk about a coach losing the room, right, when we heard the, by the way, go back and look at that show, it was a few shows ago with Larry, it was a fantastic interview, is would you rather have Larry Robinson your coach or John Tortorella? You know, and
exactly.
I mean, I just could never imagine playing for John Tortorella, even if just the way he deals with the media, you know, I'd be annoyed as a player.
I think it's pretty funny what he does to the media, but I think, you know, when you got a really good team, and things are going well. Team, the coach is happy. The players are happy. It just kind of, you know, there's going to be one or two players on every team that are pissed off because they're not playing as much as they should, or, you know, with whom they want to play with, or a goalie that, you know, thinks he should be the number one. He's not. It just happens. You can't avoid right. it. But man, if you get more than two or three unhappy players, it's going to be a long right. year. And
hard to make everyone happy, Russ. How do you do it with
it is
20
it,
plus?
It does, and that's why it's kind of back to where I was talking about Lawton, where the top six players trying to get one of the, if you think you're a top six player, it happened to me when I went from Toronto to Montreal and Pat Burns said, you're going to play on this line and you're going to play right wing. I never played right wing in my life. If I had a said no, or I had the big lip and didn't try or whatever, I would have been done. Right. I mean, I had to convince myself that I could do what he was asking me to do that I did not 100% want to do. I did not want to be on that right side, but you know what? I wanted to play for the Montreal Canadiens at that moment.
Right.
And I knew if I said, if I did something, it was almost like a test.
Right.
You know, he could have said, well, he's no good on the right side. Let's get rid of him. And he probably would have been happy at the time. Seriously, though, he didn't like right. me. So he probably would have been happy if I had to shit the bed. Then he would have put somebody in there he right. wanted. And so it's back to that convincing somebody to do something that they don't want to do for the better of the team and ultimately could be for the better of themselves, even if they don't see it in that moment. And
if you're a pouter, Russ, if anyone pouts, they must be done. A player must be done if they pout.
I got benched in when I was playing for the New York Rangers, and we were in Florida. I didn't get the puck out like I was talking about right. earlier, and I got benched. Colin Campbell benched me.
Bastard.
Another guy who didn't like me that much. So anyways, in between periods, I went into our, so we had two little locker yeah. rooms, and I went into where we took our street clothes off, and I sat in there because I was freaking pissed. And so you can call it pouting or whatever. Yeah. And then 5 minutes before, I went back, got my stuff ready and went out on the ice. And the next day we're in New York at practice, and he said, he called me in his office with the assistant coach, and he's like, do you want to quit? Do you want to this? And I go, what are you talking about? Well, you went and sat and pouted in the other room. And I said, I went in the other room because I was so fucking mad at you and your decision and not playing that I didn't want to be a negative distraction to my teammates. Mm-hmm. We're in the playoffs. So I went in there so that nobody could see how I felt. And then I put on my face and I said, we have this is the second best chance I've ever had to win the Stanley Cup. And that's all I want to do is win. And after I talked to him, I think he was like, holy shit, that was, I assume he loved what I said, because bang, I was back playing and I ended up playing pretty good in the playoffs. But he was like, do you want to go home? Do you want to quit? I'm like, what? Yeah. Oh, no. But those are, you know, if I said the wrong thing, wouldn't have been pretty.
Great stuff. Thanks everyone for emailing us. And you can do that. Email us, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. We love to hear from you. I'm getting them now. I'm starting to get them. Go to now, Rusty, off everyone, off to the website. Off you go. Okay. We got the new website, thesuspendables.ca, thesuspendables.com, either one, of course. And get on there. We got all the stuff on there. All the shows are on there. We got our merch store is on there. We got a YouTube site, Twitter is on there, and our Facebook page, which is pretty active. So thanks a lot for all of you people subscribing to the show, sharing it. Our numbers are climbing, Rusty. I looked at a chart today. We're somehow nice. we're moving up the ranks. So anyway, great week, Rusty. We're 2 weeks away from Christmas. We're going to keep doing shows. I think we'll have a Christmas show, Rusty, and we'll be back next week with another episode of The Suspendables. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you later, Rusty. Get back there, have a tequila, okay? On you.
Vesper.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning.
Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.